Hey guys, I'd like to introduce you to a new podcast that I know you're going to love. Do you like travel? Do you like picturesque locations and getting away from it all? Well, this new podcast has all that and murder. It's called Slaycation, and it's a darkly humorous look at murders and mysterious deaths that took place on vacation. Hosted by a true crime fanatic, her comedy writer husband, and his TV producing partner, Slaycation brings a unique perspective to chilling, thrilling, and WTF stories of vacations gone horribly wrong. From the twisted tale of Harold and Tony Henthorne, whose romantic anniversary in the Rocky Mountains ended with one of them falling off a cliff, to Angelica and Vincent, two recently engaged lovebirds whose Hudson Valley kayaking adventure ended underwater. Each episode of Slaycation will have you asking, accident or murder? But it's not just the stories that'll intrigue you. It's the discussion between a longtime married couple and business partners who happen to be Emmy-nominated TV producers. Each episode of Slaycation also includes humor, takeaway and travel tips that will keep your next vacation from being your last. If you're ready to pack your body bags, Slaycation is available on all major podcast platforms. Search for Slaycation on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to witness a murder?
Forrest grabbed the knife and then just stabbed Johnny in one motion.
Or how it feels to be shot?
I was immediately hit by a barrage of bullets.
Or how you would react if your spouse hired someone to kill you?
And he was to put me in a grave with a bullet wound on my head.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a stalking victim.
Came back upstairs, and when I came back and turned the corner into my room, I saw him standing there.
You'll hear from a man who was kidnapped and tortured.
I would do anything, say anything, to simply get away.
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Welcome back to Twisted News, where today we have a crazy story out of England about a military group tasked with hunting down the occupants of a downed UFO. And it's over to Alaska, where a murder mystery of a 19-year-old girl takes an unexpected turn when someone you least expect gets caught for it. Thanks for tuning in. Get ready for Scary Mysteries, Twisted News. Number 1. Downed UFO. The assertion recently by Frank Milburn, a former UK paratrooper and military intelligence officer, about British special forces recovering a non-human craft in the late 1980s in northern England is another credible story in the wide world of UFOs and alien sightings. Milburn's story echoes our long-standing fascination with the possibility of contact with alien civilizations, and with all the recent whistleblowers coming forward, he decided to tell his story as well. Whether you believe it or not, it's a strange and fascinating story, no doubt, and it adds a notable chapter to the history of UFO encounters worldwide. Now, Frank isn't a regular type of person. He's a no-nonsense kind of man. His military pedigree, with distinguished service in the British Army's elite parachute regiment and subsequent intelligence role, lends substantial weight to his account. Having transitioned from frontline service to the secretive world of military intelligence, Milburn occupies a rare position that affords him access to information and stories far beyond what the public generally hears. And one day, a man named John, which isn't his real name but used to keep his identity undercover, told him that in the 1980s, he was working for a secret unit that handled covert and clandestine operations. John was part of what was called the E Squadron, which was made up of several seasoned veterans from the Special Forces, and they most certainly did in fact exist, though not many regular people know about it. E Squadron, though, was told by the Royal Air Force of a downed craft that wasn't from any country here on Earth. And so, around 25 members of John's squad were sent out, flown in by helicopters. While he didn't explain the craft in detail, he said it was clear it wasn't human-made. And there were signs that whoever or whatever was inside had fled off into the nearby woods. And the men established a security perimeter around the downed craft and then subsequently left 8 men behind to watch over it while they set out on foot to search for the occupants of the ship. They never found anything, but this was John's story. And after just a few hours, some scientists and other special ops teams came in and took over the scene, and that was it for E Squadron's involvement. The story sounds unreal, just like many UFO stories do. But Frank Milburn says he's 100% convinced that John was telling the truth. He worked with John for years, who himself had a very impressive military resume. He had fought in the 1982 Falklands War, was a paratrooper, and just a straight shooter who really wasn't looking for any fame with his story. It was just one of the many strange and brave things he had experienced in his life, and in a casual conversation, told that story to Frank. And this case we're talking about isn't unique in the world of UFO lore. It bears resemblances to other well-documented incidents, such as the 1947 Roswell UFO incident, where the military initially reported recovering a flying disc, only to later retract that statement, leading to decades of speculation and conspiracy theories. And similarly, the Rendlesham Forest incident in the UK in 1980 involved military personnel and unexplained lights, alongside claims of encounters with an unidentified craft. And these cases, among many, many others, form a tapestry of encounters that challenge our understanding of the world we live in and the space all around us. And the swift handover of the site to scientists and technicians, as described by Milburn, is a common theme in UFO recovery stories, suggesting a pattern of military engagement followed by scientific investigation, which is all shrouded in secrecy. And this MO raises questions about the depth of governmental knowledge of extraterrestrial technology and the extent to which such information is withheld from the public. The crop circles are another phenomenon that follows this MO. Up until the 1990s, crop circles were taken very seriously, till the government stepped in and decided to make the public believe they were fake. They hired men to pretend they had made the crop circles and made sure to make them famous. And in fact, you yourself might be saying that you know crop circles are fake because people admitted to making them. But the reality is that, yes, some were made by these people, but you can always tell the fake ones from the real ones. Though, that's a whole other story to dig into. Just understand that it's about muddying the waters in every chance you get, giving out disinformation. When the government doesn't want you to know about something, there's many ways for them to make you believe it was something else entirely. While skeptics question the feasibility of keeping such operations like these and the one John experienced a secret, and people who believe in extraterrestrial life see these stories as pieces of a large puzzle indicating the presence of non-human intelligence. Frank Milburn's account of a British Special Forces operation to recover a non-human craft adds a compelling narrative to the rich tapestry of UFO and extraterrestrial encounters. While skeptics and believers may draw different conclusions, the enduring fascination with such stories speaks to a universal human instinct to explore the unknown and question our place among the stars. As we continue to probe, through both scientific endeavors and the exploration of eyewitness accounts like Milburn's, we edge closer to understanding whether we are indeed alone in the cosmos or part of a much larger, more diverse cosmic community. Number 2, Murder Mystery in Alaska. On a quiet August evening in 2003, 19-year-old Sonia Ivanov vanished under mysterious circumstances in Nome, Alaska. She had been at her friend's place, just playing board games, Her roommate and best friend, Tamer Toorak, was there, and at around 1 a.m., Toorak decided to head to another friend's house close by to go to bed since she had to work in the morning. And Sonia, having the next day off, headed out to another friend's house to hang out some more. It was raining that night. The two friends said goodbye and headed in opposite directions, in the rain. And that was the last time Sonia was seen alive ever again. The next morning, Toorak headed to her apartment to get ready for work. And she noticed Sonia wasn't there, but figured she must have crashed at a friend's place, so she didn't think much of it. But by the time she got home from work, and there was still no sign of her best friend, she began to panic and informed the police. At first, they didn't take her too seriously. In fact, they thought Tamer was overreacting because she was essentially hysterical, knowing something bad had happened. But they were sure it could be explained in many other, much less dramatic ways. The following day, when Sonia didn't show up for work, her boss also informed the police, as she was very reliable. And with that, a search was underway. It didn't take long. At around 8:30 p.m., a volunteer in the search to help find Sonia saw some fresh tire tracks that led down a road that wasn't used all that often. He followed them, and it was there he found the naked body of Sonia, lying in a pool of her own blood. Not only had she appeared to have been beaten up, but she also received two gunshots to the head. Despite initial assurances from Toorak that Ivanov had no adversaries, detectives started their inquiry by scrutinizing those close to the teenager, particularly a male acquaintance known as Kanuk. At the crime scene, the evidence showed that the tire tracks didn't match, meaning they were from one vehicle, just that the tires were not the same on each side. And there was also small blue paint marks on the brush nearby which had come off, likely from the vehicle used to bring Sonia to where she was found. Kanuk was known for driving a blue truck, distinguished by its uneven tires. The authorities' concerns heightened when they found blood inside his truck, additional dry blood on a tarp, and on the butt of a rifle stored in the vehicle. However, Kanuk maintained that he had not been in contact with Ivanov for nearly 2 weeks, claiming he was hunting with friends 70 miles away at the time this all went down. He was exonerated after tests revealed the blood belonged to an animal, and the tire tracks at the scene didn't match his truck's. The breakthrough started to come when investigators discovered that the tire impressions were left by an unaware couple who had driven down the road and never even saw Sonia. The case remained stagnant for a bit until a night shift known police officer uncovered an overlooked tip in the case file. Florence Habros had reported seeing Ivanov walking past her porch around 1:26 a.m. She witnessed her engaging with a known police SUV, and then saw Ivanov enter the vehicle before it drove away. So, is it possible that one of their own had something to do with the girl's murder? In a small town like Nome, it wasn't like there was a whole squad working that night. On the evening in question, it was Stan Piskoya, Matthew Owens, who were on duty, and that's it. Suspicions deepened when Cruiser 321, one of the department's three vehicles, vanished just before Piskoya and Owens were due in Anchorage for questioning. Owens came forward with a story of finding the vehicle being dumped near the crime scene, reported seeing an unidentified assailant who fired shots in his direction and then fled. Within the abandoned SUV, a threatening note was discovered alongside one of Ivanov's ID cards. The note expressed hatred towards police and claimed Ivanov was an unintended victim, warning of further violence if provoked any further. But that story seemed awfully convenient, don't you think? Well, the investigators thought so too. A little further digging, and despite Owens and Piskoya denying involvement in Ivanov's death, suspicions grew around Owens specifically for his weird story of a guy stealing his patrol vehicle and fleeing, and his pattern of picking up civilians, particularly women, during his patrols. He was also notably absent during a critical time frame on the morning of the incident, and when he was given a polygraph test about that night, he failed. With all this combined, Owens was let go from the police force and then arrested. Stories began to come out from several women about Owens picking them up and sexually assaulting them. And further evidence against Owens was found at a hunting camp he frequented, where investigators discovered part of a burnt-up shoe in a fire pit that matched the exact one that Ivanov was wearing the night she went missing. Despite the first trial ending in a mistrial due to a deadlocked jury, Owens was convicted of first-degree murder in a subsequent trial. On December 6th of 2005, he was sentenced to 101 years in prison. And here was a man who was supposed to keep the community safe, and he took advantage of that. Now, was he a good man who got a badge and a little bit of power which he used to take advantage of women? Or was he always a bad man, drawn to police work in order to hide who he truly was, while also helping to gain trust over those he would victimize? So there were two of the most cosmic and evil stories that we have for you guys today. Hope you enjoyed it. Really appreciate you coming by and checking out our podcast. And if you want even more in-depth true crime stories, go check out our other podcast called Every Town, because every town has a dark side. And for exclusive podcast episodes each and every week, go check out the insane stories we cover over on our Patreon. Links are down in the description. Hope you all have a good one. We'll see you in the next one.